Sometimes a great thinker comes along that takes the things you already know, organizes them in a brilliant way, leaving you with a new perspective and wisdom about the world around you. One individual fitting this category is my next guest, Dr. James Grubman. Dr. Grubman often has consulted in situations where psychology, law, finance, medicine, and business all come into play, and he draws on his experience as a psychologist, neuropsychologist, and family business consultant. And it's a pleasure to have him back on the show. Hi, Jim. Welcome back.
Hi, Steve. I'm glad to be back.
You know, the last time we spoke in detail about your last book, which is Strangers in Paradise, where you discussed the immigrant's journey. We don't really have a lot of time to go into that, but I do highly recommend that to anyone who really is trying to understand this immigrant's journey, not from country to country, but from perhaps poverty to wealth. And now your new book, which is coming out next January, talks about the journey across cultures. And you recently co-wrote an article entitled From Traditional to Blended Cultures, How Family Enterprises Manage Transitions Across Generations. So you divided world cultures into three main categories. Tell us about that.
Sure. This actually is coming out of some very recent, very groundbreaking research in cultural psychology that has begun to understand there are three main culture types around the world. And these will make sense as soon as I describe them. The first type of culture is what we call individualist culture. Is with my colleague Dennis Jaffe and I. This consists of North America in terms of the U.S. and Canada, Northern Europe, Great Britain, Australia, what people often think of as the West. The individualist culture is focused on, as you might expect, the individual. The individual tends to be most important compared to family and oriented to assertiveness, direct communication, self-sufficiency, all the qualities we associate. There's a second kind of culture, which is largely in East Asia, which we're calling collective harmony culture. China, Hong Kong, elements of Japan, and the various countries around there. This is a culture that's grounded in Confucian principles and has a very strong emphasis on the family, the collective, and in self-esteem rooted in what is called face, maintaining dignity in a very social environment. The most recent research has clarified the third kind of culture, which is called honor culture, and it puts together what may seem like disparate cultures, Middle East, Latin America, India, Russia, Southern and Eastern Europe, essentially cultures that begin in a tribal kind of culture. And honor cultures also have a strong emphasis on the family and community, but with a heavy emphasis on maintaining reputation, respect, and honor in a different way than harmony culture.
Is the individualist culture that we know here in North America, is that a typical idea to the rest of the world, or is it somewhat unique?
It is actually unique, where much of the world is much more focused on family and, in a sense, the word tribe, a sort of a clan. And they see the strong individualist focus of Western culture as somewhat unusual and very self-centered in a way.
There's a quote in the article, "In America, we say that the squeaky wheel gets the grease. In Japan, people say that the nail that stands up gets hammered down." That pretty much explains it, right?
It does, that we cherish in the West individualism, assertiveness, and self-sufficiency, when to the rest of the world, they don't understand why family and the fact that drawing too much attention to yourself are neglected. And so it's a very different mindset with much greater emphasis on family functioning and the collective family elsewhere in the world.
So as globalism increases and families send their children out around the world for higher educations, and those younger people come back with different mores, different ideas of how they want to live their lives, they come back and perhaps find difficulty assimilating back in, and the families receiving them don't really understand. I want to read from an excerpt in the article. A daughter from a business family with an honor culture married and went to live in the United States, where she received her MBA and worked for a large corporation. Following tradition, she left her family's business to join her husband's family, but the marriage fell apart. After her divorce, she wished to rejoin her family's business and return home to her country, or return to her home country. Her father was open to bringing her back, but her tradition-oriented brothers were not. They felt if their sister rejoined the business, they would be diminished in the community, and they also did not like the prospect of losing some of their shares and collaborating with a woman. Her father, though, open to her rejoining, wanted her to live in the family compound with the rest of the family. And how to reconcile the daughter's westernized character, or how does one reconcile the daughter's westernized character and her cherished roots in the family? How would you counsel in a situation like this?
My colleague Dennis and I see this often, and what we do is we actually help families do two things. One is we really help them understand that this is cultural in nature and not individual personality. Many families feel that a daughter like this would be simply doing some type of betrayal of the family traditions or the family itself. And we help families frame it from a cultural standpoint, which tends to normalize it, defuse some of the tension, and provide an opening for the next step. And the second step is using negotiation strategies and methods. I often work with families around the idea of clarifying what their shared interests are rather than their differences, to use current, very modern negotiation techniques of what's called interest-based negotiation, to come toward compromise solutions that focus on what everybody wants if it can be managed, and to work out the differences. So by framing it in a cultural way and then using negotiation, it works out.
So in this example, in order for the daughter to rejoin the business, what changes or accommodations would need to take place?
One of the things that happens is that the family discusses what they want for the business. What are their shared interests for the family enterprise? And in the modern world, for example, as you mentioned, globalization, helping the brothers and the father understand the utility of having greater involvement of a woman in the business was something that they did not think of and had to get used to compared to their tradition.
Mm-hmm.
But they saw the utility of it. For the daughter, for her to be able to talk about what she wants, such as a little bit more freedom and recognition, but to be willing to blend back in with the family heritage is something that she would clarify. So I help families start and maintain the discussion around areas of common interest, working out what's needed for the business, and seeing if they can achieve some compromises together.
Now, they wanted her to live in the family compound with the rest of the family. I'm sure that was not acceptable by her. What would have been the compromise there?
Well, what is interesting was the compromise there was she agreed to maintain a residence in the family compound, but they agreed that she could also maintain a weekend residence elsewhere where she was living more among very old friends that she had gotten from school and that she had opportunities to have a different social life. So she agreed to participate in living in the family compound, and they granted her some freedom not to have to do that full time. And by doing so, they achieved common goals.
So understanding, I think, is the key here. This idea to be able to incorporate the perspectives of other cultures. So the elders need to understand certain things. What would be some of the ideas, new ideas they would need to adopt?
One of the most important things elders need to adopt is understanding that in the modern world, their children or grandchildren have options. For many elders, the tradition is you come back and work in the family when I tell you to. And the idea that the younger generation might say no and have other options is simply not thought of. So the elders need to really understand the new generation going off to be educated in London or Stanford or Miami. understands they have options in the world. And if the elders can come to accept that and not see that as a betrayal, but simply as a reality and a consequence of the education the elders paid for, they can be more open to it.
What about the younger generation? What, in turn, do they need to understand?
Very often, the younger generation needs to understand that they need to speak more respectfully and using a little more traditional language and cultural attitudes that will be understood by the elders compared to what they've been learning in individualist education. So they need to reconnect with their heritage and their roots in a cultural sense and do the negotiation with an understanding of where the family has come from.
A new perspective on the globalized world in which we live. Jim's got a book co-authored that is entitled Cross Cultures, How Global Families Negotiate Change Across Generations. And Jim, what's the best way, what website can people get to hear more about this?
Either originally through my website, jamesgrubman.com, or directly from Amazon.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
To find out more about Dr. Jim Grubman and to hear this interview again, join the conversation at stevepomerantz.com, P-O-M-E-R-A-N-Z, stevepomerantz.com.